You probably wonder why there's four chairs here, and we'll get to that in a moment. Today is Mother's Day, and then we've already celebrated that in a number of ways. The choir and the story and the story by Bill and so on. And I thought today the theme that we have with us is really looking at a mother in the Bible. Her name is Naomi. Now the Bible title is Ruth, but really it's about Naomi. And in a bit I'm going to invite some people up here to fill in the story of their life as it pertains to kind of the themes of Scripture. And so I'll invite them up in a moment. So one of the first things you notice about the Scripture that was read is that there were doors that opened and doors that closed. I'm putting some of these themes on, superimposing them on, but you can see that a famine was in the land, so they went from their home country and they moved to Moab. And that was quite a move from their security of their place to a place that was foreign. And so the Naomi and her husband and boys moved there. While they were in the land, of course, the another door that opened for them was that their sons got married. And they married two girls from Moab. One was Orpah and one was Naomi. Was Ruth, I'm sorry. And so that door opened for them. Also, another door that closed was that Naomi's husband died. And so there was another door that closed. And they had to adjust it. And then it really became a big issue when both the sons died and there were three widows all left together. And Naomi starts her journey back home, back to close to Bethlehem where she had come from. And that opened another door for her, except that she was very poor, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Eventually, Ruth meets Boaz, who became her husband, and so on. And so there's a sense of doors closing and doors opening that that Naomi had to adjust to. It's never static; it was never the same. Another theme that comes through is the resiliency of Naomi and the family. And so their standard of living was always a moving kind of a standard, right? You can imagine leaving your country, and so many of you have left Russia and so on and moved to Canada, and the standard of living that came here was not the same as it was in Russia. And as I've listened to some of your stories, it really is amazing how your mothers were so critical in the journey from Russia or Ukraine to Germany, from Poland to Germany and to Canada. So powerful. But the standard of living was never the same. I always had to adjust to it. I always had to kind of reassess it, look at it, and make the best out of it. And it was that way with Naomi in the Old Testament. I'm sure, you know, she had to go and make new friends in the new country. And when she went back, she said, you know, that she was considered herself really poor and said, call me, my name is bitter. God has been really hard on me. And so there's death, there's famine, there's going back to the homeland. And she said, call me Mara. The Almighty has made me bitter. The Lord has afflicted me and the Almighty has brought misfortune to me. That's Ruth 1:20. And so that's another part of this journey that you had to adjust to it, had to make sense of the changes that came. But the third part is also very profound. And the third part is that Ruth said something to her mother-in-law that really changed the picture for her. Orpah had left, and as you heard the scripture being read, Orpah had left and gone back to her family of origin. But Ruth turns to her mother, and what does she say? She says to her mother, where you go, I will go. Your people, where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. And so under the underpinning of this whole story is that there's a covenant, a profound spiritual reality that impacted Ruth. That really was the glue that helped her keep going on this. And so the journey never ends. Kelsey made a little title to the message today, and it's really significant because it says, a tribute to mom embracing the journey. Being a mom never ends. Once you start that journey, it just goes on and it changes. It has doors that open, doors that close. It has adjusting to new situations, new realities, and underpinning. The underpinning is a sense of faith. And so I'd like to ask three people to come up this morning to kind of focus on that and tell their stories a bit. So I'm going to ask Lil Thompson to come, Carol to come, and Abe Rempel to come up. So why don't you come up and take one of these chairs up here. So I've asked these three people, and I'll just share a little bit too, so I'll sit down here and just pretend you're in our living room for a moment, and we want to reflect briefly on these three themes. What is the context? The first theme is, what is the context that I've asked you to share and that you've said you would be willing to share about today, and how your mom was part of that context? So I'll start with Carol. I'll start with myself. Let me start, okay? And then I'll move it over to Carol. So I'll give you this, but yeah. So just so you know, many of you know, I grew up in India, but the context was a little bit different. My mom went to India before she was married, and after a year of being in India, my dad followed, and shortly after that, they got married. And so I was born when my parents were learning language school. So to learn the Hindi language, it took 2 years of constant learning. And so I was born in that context. And she had to adjust to the Indian way of life and what that meant for a girl who'd grown up in northern Saskatchewan to move to India, learn a new language, get married, and I was the oldest of the children. Perhaps another, just a big, quick context is that as we all became school age, we left our home and went into boarding. And you can imagine that impacted mom. So that was part of the context in which I grew up. So that every year we would be almost like guests living at home, because during the winter months we'd come home, and December, January, and February school was out. And during the, from February, the end of February to the end of November, we went up to the mountains and went to school. And so she would say goodbye to us as we left on the train to go up to school. About April or May, she'd come up for maybe to the mountains for 2 months, and we'd go out of boarding. And so that's sort of the context, which I will talk a little bit later about some of the stresses and so on. So Carol, what is the context for you?
Well, growing up, we lived on a farm, and we were four children in a family. My parents were very loving.
Can you hear?
Parents.
Can you hear? Can you just turn that up?
Is it on?
It should be. It's green. It should be on.
How about if I hold it a little closer? Does that work?
No, it's still not. We'll try this one. That one's on, I think. Yeah. Switch them up.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, now I feel like I'm coming through somewhere. Just to repeat a little bit, my parents, we were four children in the family. My parents lived on in the country on a ranch. We had mink, about 1,000 to 1,200 mink. So family life was busy. Holidays were few, maybe a weekend. And we had a very happy family, but we were one boy among three girls. That's how the family was. They wanted another boy. And you know, God gave them a boy, but he also took him away. He was stillborn. It was a sad day for our family. And so mom and dad kind of thought about this a bit and said, well, maybe we should adopt a boy. So they applied for adoption, went through all the different agencies that they needed to go through. Everything was settled. And then time went on. 6 years, nothing happened. One day they get a call. Are you still interested in adopting a boy? And Mom said, well, I'll have to check with my husband. So the next thing that we knew was they said yes, and we adopted a boy. This boy was an Aboriginal fellow who had lived in different homes, was kind of an unsettled boy, but was a joy to our family. He was 32 pounds in a year and a month, and he didn't walk. And he was really heavy, so Mom developed a few muscles. But he was a joy to our family, at least at first. And then 6 years later, they adopted another one, and she was a girl. She was a Scandinavian, Norwegian gal background. Anyway, as time went on, things got very difficult because Rick wasn't a normal boy. He was a boy that chose to go the route of not being obedient to the law. And so my father spent a lot of time in and out of court in his first years. And this continued for quite a while. Virginia had her issues. It demanded a lot from Mom. She gave a lot. Virginia got pregnant, and she needed to live at home or find another home, and eventually they built a place for her in their basement and raised her daughter. We had never known issues like this. However, as time went on, Dad passed away, Mom passed away, but at the funeral, Rick and Virginia shared how that Rick said, if you had never lost a boy, I would never have had a life with you. I would not have had this life. And he gave a real tribute to Mom and Dad. Mom and Dad never heard this, and they reaped many years of sorrows, but in the final end, things really turned around in both our kids' lives. It's amazing. And their grandkids, too, who Dad had spent a lot of time in and out of court. And Dad was in the ministry at the time. So you can just imagine, like when Rick stood up and gave this tribute to Mom and Dad, or to Mom, specifically to Mom, at her funeral, it was so awesome. They never heard it, but they reaped all that they had sowed.
Just one comment, as you know, I was part of this family and. I was expressing my concern how they were raising. Well, this was not that long ago, before my father-in-law passed away. So it would be about 2007. He passed away in 2008, and I was just commenting on what was happening there. And Carol's mom just came back at me. How dare you challenge Dad on that, right? And she just put a real slice there. That's not right. And I thought, whoa, that's amazing. She really cared enough to tell me just where I could stop.
She was a very quiet woman.
She's a quiet woman, but you know what? Sometimes that fierceness came out in her, and it was good to see. Okay, thank you. Abe. I was having breakfast one morning not so long ago with Abe, and he was telling his story about his mother, and I thought, you know, that would be awesome if he could just share a little bit of that today. So, Abe, just share a little bit of the context and a little bit of what you remember of your mom in that.
If I'm going to talk about a little bit, it could take a lot.
I know, so you got to keep it little.
My mother, she was a woman that exemplified the Christian life. She lived it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And this was where you started. Where did you start your life with?
My mother started in Siberia, Russia. And they had a child there that was 4 years old when they left Russia, and she lost two boys in Russia. And then the communists came to the village and they said, we're going to take all your children under by the age of five and put them into our boarding school so we can teach them our theologies. So the women, they decided that they didn't want that. Our children should be raised in the Christian atmosphere. So they decided to leave Russia in 1929. And when they got to Germany in the refugee camp, they lost that four-year-old daughter. And then my other sister was born there in the refugee camp. And they wanted to come to Canada, but Canada said, no, you have problems with your eyes, so you're not allowed to come to Canada. So there were about 1,500 of those people ended up going to Brazil. By the help of the Dutch queen, the Queen of Holland, supplied them with a ship to take all these refugees to Brazil. And they set them in a jungle setting where each one could walk a day's journey and that would be their property. Mm. That's what they give them, 1 day's journey in the square. And so they start cleaning up the jungle, and they took the lumber. The German government built a sawmill there, and they sold the lumber to the sawmill, and they made a living there that way. But after the war broke out, the Mennonite colony were told they no longer are allowed to use the German language because Germany is an enemy of Brazil. So they took all their property rights away. All the property they had cleaned for just about 10 years, they cleaned the jungle, made it productive. They lost that property. They were moved them all into the cities. They had to work in cities and factories and that. So that was some of the doors closing that Pastor Gary was talking about. First the communists closed the door, and now the Brazilian government closed the door again. They had to start again from scratch. And Dad worked in the factory, and the money that he made in a month wouldn't buy an 80 pound of white flour. That's how dear the living was, pretty hard for them. We were raised on cornbread, beans, and rice, and very little meat. Sometimes we'd get some bread, but the bread was made from the screening from the flour mill, the bran, the fine screening. Mom made bread out of that stuff. So to this day, I always ask for white bread because I love white bread. So one day, I don't know where Mom got a white flour. She was able to make one loaf of white bread. Hmm. And us kids were just sitting around that table. We loved to taste that bread. But lo and behold, a beggar came into the yard asking for food. So Mom cut that bread in half and gave this beggar half a loaf of bread.
Wow.
And later on I asked her, why did you do that? That was our bread, Mom. She says, maybe that was Jesus. That's my Bob.
Yeah, thank you. Profound impact. Just a simple story like that just had a profound impact on you. Thank you, Abe. Lil, share us your story. You had a neat
story.
Just that part where you were a single parent. What happened there?
First of all, my mother was a prayer warrior, and she's been gone for 30 years, and her prayers are still following me. So it's so important that we pray and pray for our children, because our prayers too will follow them. Mm-hmm. As for my story, this is 1986. My first husband, Ben, and I, and our three boys, the ages of 11, 9, and 5, are living in Saskatoon. My husband was a teacher, and I was a stay-at-home mom. On May 11th of 1986, early in the morning, my husband got very, very sick. And this is 49 years ago. Ambulance service in Saskatoon like they do now. They just had one ambulance, and by the time it got there, my neighbor and I already had taken my husband to the hospital. As we took him into the hospital, he immediately was, there happened to be an intern specialist there, and he immediately gave attention to him, and he came to me and he said, you know, your husband is dying, and I do not know why. And so he died within the 2 hours from the time that he got sick until he passed away. They didn't know what the cause of death was until after they did the autopsy. A blood clot had gone through the heart, and that was the reason for the death. Of course, this left me totally, completely traumatized and in shock to think that, you know, a loving husband, a loving father, the three boys that needed their dad so bad, and he was gone. And I was very angry with God for a long time. I just couldn't understand why God would do this to me. But anyway, at that time, as I say, it's 49 years ago, there was not even anything written about death or about grief. And it was in 1969 when Elizabeth Kubler-Ross came out with a book of death and dying. And it was after this little experience had happened to me. And the attitude at that time was, well, your husband is in heaven, and you've got these three boys, and so, you know, carry on with life. Well, that's maybe easier said than done. It was sort of the premise that I lived under for a period of time. We had gone to a church in the northwest part of Saskatoon, but because we had bought a home in southern part of Saskatoon, we decided to change churches, because the older two boys were involved in Scouts, and it was too far to drive across the city. So we changed churches. And this church was a very new church. It was a sister church of First Mennonite Church. And these were very well-educated, highly professional people, all young. And so we didn't always feel that we fitted into this, because our situation was somewhat different. This is in the 60s when the American dream is the big thing, to own a house with two cars and to have a cottage at the lake and skiing and this kind of thing. And after, of course, after the death of my husband, we just couldn't possibly do it. And my utmost dream was to have a job to support and to educate the boys. My husband was a teacher, and fortunately the school board was very, very good to me. The first year I was a TA, a teacher's aide, and then I went to the school board and I asked the superintendent whether I could go to university and if there would be a job for me afterwards, because I needed the job. And the superintendent said yes, there would be. So I took my 4 years in three. I picked up Intercession Summer School to pick up the extra year, plus raising the three boys and getting them all educated and so on. And the church sort of distanced themselves from us because we didn't fit into their dream. My husband was the first death in the church, and of course this was a real difficult time for these young people to and young families to recognize that death is part of life. And so we just always felt that we were different. And this made it sometimes really difficult, particularly for the boys. So as time goes on, after I graduated from university, I did get a job. The school board gave me a job, which I was very fortunate for. My boys all had to work as soon as they were able to work, because we needed the income for it. And they also were able to get a job with the school board where they could supervise in the school during the time that there were activities, and then they could do their studies, and then they would have to clean up later on. God also has been very close to me, even though at times I felt that God was very distant. There's so many ways that he has led me, looking back. And of course, during that time of the death and so on, I was just in total shock. And I'm sure that there were things that I didn't understand and maybe things I didn't do right, but at that time, I couldn't believe that this is where I was at. And God has blessed me in the fact that all three boys were able to get educated. All three of them are engineers and are doing well. And then he also, after 8 years, when I was a widow, God blessed me with a wonderful husband, Gene, and many of you may know him. And we had almost 35 wonderful years together. He was absolutely the best father and grandfather, especially to the grandchildren. That was the only grandchildren, the grandchildren only knew him as their granddad. And he was just the best. So God has truly blessed me. So I'm truly grateful. And through all these troubles and trials, we certainly do learn a lot and also recognize that sometimes God puts us through these things so that we can grow to be the person that he wants us to be. Thank you.
Yes, just to complete my story a little bit, there's some things I think profoundly deep was the faith that my mom had in the Lord. I'm sure there were times where tears would come to her eyes, and she would, because all us kids would be in boarding, and so we left home even before, and then naturally leave home. There's some things I do remember of my mom when we were on vacation. We were on vacation. It was part of their work. She just worked along with my dad, so amazing. Like, we would go as families, she'd get us all ready, we'd go as families to the villages and have services in the villages, and she just made sure we were all participated in that. One thing I do remember is her compassion. She had a tremendous sense of compassion. One of the traditions in the Indian culture, the culture in the villages, was that when there was a newborn, there would be spots, sometimes there are spots in the roof of the mouth, and for some reason, they would bathe these little babies in cold water as many times a day as there were spots in their mouth. And some of the children actually died because of that. And so when she would be in the village, she would sit on the ground and get them to heat some water up, make it nice and warm, and then she would show them and demonstrate how to give these children a bath the way they would, but with warm water. And the kids would just really warm up to that. You could see them starting to enjoy a bath with warm water. And so in that kind of way, just in kind of a really demonstrative way, she would show the compassion of Jesus as they worked in the villages. So I think if I look back, one of the things that probably she impacted me was that sense of compassion. I got that from my mom. So thank you, Mom.